Welcome to the Drama Teacher Podcast, brought to you by Theater Folk, the Drama Teacher Resource Company. I'm Lindsay Price. Hello. I hope you're well. Thanks for listening. This is episode 188, and you can find any links to this episode in the show notes, which are at theaterfolk.com/episode188. Okay, so today we're talking creative thinking and collaboration in a fabulous application. See, can you tell I'm smiling? I think this is such a great idea. So I'm a big fan of play festivals, fringe festivals. Spent 6 years on the fringe festival circuit, 24-hour play festivals, plays that happen within limitations, plays that have to happen in a time limit. It's exciting. There's tons of adrenaline. It's all flowing. And anyone that I've been involved with has been such a fun, creative experience. So when one of Theater Folk's great playwrights, Wendy Marie Martin, tells me that not only did she create a festival, but that it is an international festival that happens around the world, hence the term international, but it's over 24 hours from casting to closing curtain in all these places all over the world, well, you have to color me intrigued. See, and then I say that stuff like that, and I go, what is the color for intrigue, right? That's a question that could keep me up for hours. You know, is it red? Is it purple? Okay. This is a rabbit hole I do not need to involve any of you in. So how does the idea of being involved in an international 10-minute play festival sound, and you don't even have to leave your backyard? I know, it sounds intriguing, right? Well, it's intriguing to me. Let's get to it. Hello, everyone. I am happy to be talking to Wendy Marie Martin today. Hello, Wendy Marie.
Hello.
Now, we here in Theater Folk Global Headquarters, we know Wendy Marie because she has a lovely play in our catalog called Breathless. So you all need to go and get that, right? We need to get that up front, I think.
That'd be awesome.
But also, Wendy Marie is part of a really interesting project that I wanted to share with all of you. But also, there are some interesting things going on in Wendy Marie's back room, which are also going to be of interest to you. And I was just looking at your bio before we started rolling. And the first thing that hits my eye is that you have a BFA in acting, but an MFA in playwriting.
Yes.
So what was your, so it sounds like your instinct in high school and coming out of high school was acting, and somewhere that switched. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I was lucky enough to have a high school drama teacher, Billy Houck,
who I believe you kidding?
Is one of your writers. No.
Oh my gosh. Sorry. That was
he's the one that told me to submit actually to you.
Do you know, but I didn't know that he was your teacher.
He was, and He is a playwright. So he had us writing a lot of monologues and scenes in school in addition to acting.
Okay. So, oh my God, that's a lovely little addition. I did know that he suggested you, but I'm pretty sure he never said he was a student of yours. Okay, so but then when you went to college, what made you decide acting first?
Yeah, I had a hard decision with that actually, because I in high school I directed probably as much as I acted. And so, but for some reason that wasn't actually an option. We did write, but I didn't really understand you could study playwriting as a thing at that time. So I went to college. I started in Chicago in a liberal arts program. I came back to California to do a 2-year conservatory intensive program. And then I went to New York to finish my BFA in acting at Marymount, because that's where all my credits went to get me out the quickest.
Right.
And but I didn't do any acting in it. Ironically, I actually took playwriting classes while I was in New York.
Isn't that so? That was where the heart lied, right?
Yeah, I think after 2 years of an intensive acting conservatory, I was just sort of clear that I don't need to be on stage. But what I really like to do is create stories. And when I'm writing, I'm sort of acting and directing the thing at the same time, but it's just me in my room doing it. So that, I like that.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Nobody talks to me in my head or anything.
Right.
My husband often says that, sometimes he'll look at me and I'm acting it out. Like I'm having the both conversations, arms are flailing, and it's just that thing that happens.
Exactly. Our own little private theater.
Which you have to try and keep private. It doesn't work so well when you're in public and you start having conversations with yourself. Okay. So I think that's I think that's a really interesting thing to talk about, because all of our listeners are dealing with students who are just sort of trying to figure out what they want to be. And a lot of them have that, oh, I want to go be an actor. Oh, I want to go be this. And I think it's really interesting that you started in one program, went to a conservatory, and then ended up in a different one. That how did you, because this is something that I have an issue with, what made it for you okay to leave, you know what I mean? To let go of a program.
Well, the first program for me, because we had a very broad perspective, which I really value in high school. We had to make our sets, we had to do directing, we had to do lighting design, we wrote, we acted. So we got a very broad education, but we didn't get a very specific education in acting. And at the liberal arts college where I attended, there was a feeder high school from Utah, and these kids were coming in knowing like every method of acting, knowing all these theories that I had no idea what they were talking about. And I realized at that point that I wanted to be able to be, you know, have a seat at the table and be in the room. And that was going to, for me, require a more intensive training. So I went to PCPA, which is at the Pacific Conservatory Theater in California, and that's where I got my craft as an actor, but it's only a 2-year certificate conservatory. So I was so close to having the degree, and I knew I wanted to teach. So I matriculated into Marymount and graduated from there with my BFA.
Well, this leads me so nicely into my next question, which is, you also talk about that you specifically work with emerging artists, again, which I think is very, it's a very interesting phrase, because again, all our listeners, they're working with emerging human beings, right? Whether they become artists or not, it's a very specific, task to be a teacher. And what was it about teaching for you that you knew you wanted to do it? What was it about teaching?
You know, I get such a thrill out of watching like somebody's eyes light up and getting in touch with what excites them just about life. And about, I mean, theater just makes better human beings, because we have an opportunity to understand people from a much more intimate perspective. And I feel like every single student would benefit from this type of, you know, human analysis, to get an idea of what it means to be human and why people do what they do. And working with young artists, whether it's an actor or a writer, to really get to the heart of what they want to say, what they have to say, and to help them find a voice to say that. And then for actors to understand that, you know, acting is a craft and it's not an accident. They're actually choices that we make, and to watch them make that discovery that they are creating this character based on their choices, and they have the power over what direction this is going to go. I find that really, really exciting.
Well, and it translates so easily into real world skills, right? You have the choice. You have the ability to figure out how to work with others, you know?
Yeah. Well, theater makers are collaborators. They're critical thinkers. They're creative thinkers.
Yeah. And this leads again so nicely. You are reading my mind. you're just like awesome with the segues. But we're here to talk about a very specific project that you're involved with. And we're making sure we get this podcast out in a really nice, timely fashion, because it's something that our listeners can be involved with as well. And that it really deals with all those wonderful skills, those collaboration skills, critical thinking skills, creative creativity skills all in one really nice, tidy package. So let's start by saying, why don't you give a description of your festival?
Yes, we have a festival. It's called the Red Eye Tens International Play Festival. It began 6 years ago, kind of as a fluke. In my MFA program, I have my MFA through the Playwrights Lab at Hollins University, and the head of our department, Todd Ristow, was very, very adamant our first year about finding ways to produce each other's work and at whatever level each person could do it. And since I didn't have a theater company or a space, I was looking for something that I could do to serve the most playwrights in my program, but in a realistic fashion for me. And we have a festival here in the summer session that we do. It's called Overnight Sensations. And it actually is a genuine 24-hour play festival. They get prompts Friday night at 8, write the play overnight. The directors get the plays at 8 o'clock in the morning. The actors come at noon. And at 8 o'clock that night, there's productions of 6 new plays. So so I talked to my colleagues and said, hey, you know, how cool would it be for us to do a 24-hour play festival, but in every time zone in the country? And they were like, that's crazy. And I said, hey, I know, but what do you think if we try it? And I found a colleague in each time zone, and we were like, let's give it a shot. And so we did. The first year, it actually was a 24-hour play festival. And that was insane because we had, you know, 4 directors and 1 playwright, and they kept having to try to have discussions with their directors. And it was just, it ended up being too much. So the next year, we kept it within a 24-hour production time period, but we allowed 10-minute plays to be submitted. And it's found its way now into, we realized in our third year that it's the perfect vehicle for high schools and colleges because they have the infrastructure for the festival. It requires 6 rehearsal spaces. It requires a team of people to feed the actors and directors and a space to perform in. And most high schools and colleges have a booster club, and they have spaces for rehearsals in classrooms, and then they have a theater space. So in our third year, we made it exclusively a festival for work for young actors and young audiences.
Well, and I find more than any other group, if you tell high school students you have 24 hours to go from audition to show, there will be a show.
Yeah, they love it. Yeah. They are so on board. They don't, you know, they're so much better sometimes, and I would even say most of the time, than adults as far as not overthinking it.
No, well, it's because we know, right? We know about the, it's very fascinating because I think there's no other group it right now that is so obsessed with failure and that notion of can't failing. However, they're also easier to jump on board the impossible, if that makes any sense. You know what
I mean? It does. Yeah. And in fact, we're at a point now where, you know, our guidelines for the playwrights is that they have between 3 and 6 characters, because that gives us between 18 and 36 roles. Which seemed manageable for most of our hosts. But we're finding in our California site that there's a lot of actors that want to get involved, and we only have, you know, between 18 and 36 roles, and we probably could get twice as many kids on stage if we had the, you know, capacity for that. But they are super excited about it, and they jump in for everything. If they don't get to act in it, then they'll stage manage for us, or they'll come do tech for us. So it's really exciting.
Well, yeah, exactly what I was going to say. Like, because it's such a time sensitive event, like it's not the satisfaction of product is like immediate.
Yeah, and everybody know. I mean, we're very transparent about it, and every host site does it a little differently. We have 10 hosts this year, and we have a couple new hosts, which is really exciting. But each site figures out the way that works best for them. But in general, our model is that on a Friday night, you get together for some kind of little reception, and the roles are actually cast randomly.
Oh, so no, really?
The names are put in a hat. And depending on how brave the site is, they can put all the names in one hat, or they can separate them by gender. And the directors literally go around taking turns just picking names out of the hat. So they don't know which, and they pick their play out of the hat. So they don't know which play they're going to get, and they don't know who their cast is until they're done with that random selection.
Well, that again, perfect for high schools. No one has to perform an audition monologue.
Yeah, exactly. And there's no favoritism. It's completely random and everybody gets to play.
And if you wanted to, I mean, just because this is all I do is think about reflections and rubrics and for our folks, but it's like, what an awesome to do at the end is to host one of these and just reflect again at the end about how is this process when that control of, well, I'm going to pick my friends or I'm going to pick even picking the what you think is the best person for the role, when all of that is taken out and all you're doing is just figuring out how to work together and that whole critical thinking piece, how do we work together and how do we make this work?
Yeah. And it takes a lot of pressure off too, because, we tell the playwright straight up, this is a random selection process. So, you may have an 80-year-old man, if it's a community group, playing a 5-year-old girl, who knows, you may have a 15-year-old girl playing a 90-year-old man. We don't, it's just up to the luck of the draw. So that takes a lot of pressure off of production, like having a goal of a perfect production. And it really puts emphasis on exploration and experimentation.
Oh, I like that too. That's because that's something else I find that this our group of youngsters in the 21st century is really onto that. How do we make things perfect? And it's like, well, what if you can't?
Yeah, exactly. There's no pressure there. And along the way, when the audience becomes involved and becomes that, third part of the project, they're told straight up, these plays were received last night. They were worked on today. And now here they are. And most of them are able to get off book. So it's actually a full production. Sometimes you'll have a complication and then you may have someone with a script on stage. But most of the last few years, I think everyone's been off book.
Well, and I think that is the most exciting, is when your audience is on your side even before you start. Like, you just have the most, the experience just, it goes to a whole new level. I adore these kind of, I love 24-hour play festivals or short play festivals or limits. Actually, it's limits that I think are so creatively satisfying when the world's not your oyster, but it's like, these parameters have to be followed, right?
Yeah, but you got to get it done. That's the whole goal. Everyone's just working to get it done, which is really nice because it's a teamwork. There's such a collaboration. And the cool thing that has emerged with this international aspect, because now we have a host in Germany and a host in Ireland joining us this year. Germany we've had for a couple of years. But so our first premiere starts 9 hours ahead of everybody else. And they're texting each other. So all day, everybody from every site is tweeting and posting on Facebook, and all those feeds go onto our website. So you can see what everybody's doing. They're doing pictures and little videos and little messages. And as each premiere kicks off, the cast from the other host sites send little video or audio messages to the cast that's just kicking off their premiere. And then starting in the United States, we have every hour a premiere until we hit the California groups. And it's just this huge, fun international collaboration within a 24-hour period.
Well, and it's using social media at its absolute best,
Yeah.
Like as a communicative tool, it's a bonding tool, right? That it's everybody's doing in this wonderful thing, and that how, you're talking about comparing and contrasting too. Like how does the host in Germany interpret play A? How is a school in California interpreting host A? How is Ireland interpreting host or play? I'm getting it all mixed up, but
that's it.
The notion of interpretation, again, in a world where we're so focused on doing things just like they are on Broadway.
This is very grassroots, and it's really amazing to see, because it depends on your space. It depends on the people you're working with and sort of the age range and your culture as to how you're going to approach each of these plays. And for the playwrights, because the goal is, and I have to say, we've been having a little bit of a complication getting all the videos from our hosts to get them up. I'm hoping this year that we can get better about that. But the idea is that every host site uploads a video of the production. So the playwright has an opportunity to see their play done in, 8 or 10 different ways.
That's so awesome. I think what a great sense of feedback that they can get and interpretation and all of that stuff. And I want to make sure I mention this. I always mention the show notes in the intros and the extras, but I'm going to make sure I mention it here too, is that we have the link for the festival in the show notes so that you can have a link yourself for our Red Eye Tens International Play Festival so that you can go and have, we're not going to have a link, Wendy Marie. We're just going to talk about it. No, so that people can go and see for themselves and see if it's something that that you can do. I just think this is an ideal school project. I just think it's so it's such a great it's great, it's quick, it's a great effect. I'm not gonna say great seven times. It's very effective. It's all these wonderful things, which is why I wanted to talk to you about it.
Yeah, thank you.
So tell me. So let's talk about just 24-hour play festivals. And what's your advice for those who, you know, if they want to be involved in this, in the Red Eye, or they want to try and put it up themselves? What are some pieces of advice you would give hosts?
Well, one of the things that I have learned over the last 6 years is organization is key. And I find that if you're working with partners who are off-site, then having templates to help them, to help communicate the structure of the festival is really effective. We have a handbook of guidelines for our hosts and down to sample rehearsal schedules for the day. And I'm working right now on getting testimonials from each of the hosts and some tips on how they do their festival. So I think communication is key. And also communicating within your own group and out to anybody who is responsible for helping make the event happen. Because it's a crazy day, but it's a wonderful day. And at the end of it, everybody's exhausted and happy. If the communication is in line and that's not overshadowed by frustration. So that would be the key to me is keeping the organization and communication clear.
Have you ever had issues come back where this scenario didn't work for hosts, where they were like, they were resistant to the randomness, or that there was an issue with the play? Like, how are the plays chosen?
I have a committee of readers from around the world, actually, of theater professionals. I always try to have a high percentage of people working in young adult theater, and they're working artists, directors, actors, and playwrights. So they all read the plays and they score them, and then the math makes the decision in the end for which six plays will do.
Oh, math.
Oh, math, yes.
Okay, so that's cool. So that there are, so that these are chosen independently. So have there been issues, and how did you deal with groups that struggle with this format?
You know, I have to say, we haven't had any issues. We've had, I'm sure there are hosts that might not choose to do the random casting. We sort of leave it, that's our suggested model for the festival. But if they feel that they would like to cast it in another way, we're not going to stop them from doing that, because we want each host site to have the most positive experience. I don't think we have any sites that don't do the random casting, though. Everyone just kind of embraces it with this sort of, you know, adventurous spirit. And I haven't had any complaints from playwrights, which is what I was most concerned about. Because, you know, some of the sites are amateur and they're going to do a very different level of work than somebody who has like even a really, really well-defined theater program at a high school. But I've never had any complaints about that. So I think we're really lucky.
Well, I think that as with everything, things, when you know what the scenario is up front, it's a lot harder to complain, you know, like,
yeah. And for the playwrights, I mean, they're getting, you know, anywhere from six, I think at 1 year, we had 6 to 10 credits on their resume in one day.
Are you kidding? Oh, and from, like, I look at it and go, what a great way to see a whole bunch of different interpretations and figuring out how your work is. I'm already sitting here thinking, when's the deadline for next year? I'm like,
yeah, no, we're open. We will let new hosts come on board as late as they feel comfortable doing it. We do follow the Dramatists Guild Bill of Rights. So each of the host sites, it's made known to them that they are not to change the work of a playwright without the playwright's permission. And we enforce that pretty strictly. Which I think is really important as a playwright. And we have had hosts that jump in like a week before and they're like, hey, we want to try this. And we're like, sure, you know, get us your information. We'll get you up on the website and everyone can play. We try to send the scripts out to the host sites at least two weeks before the festival casting. So they have a chance to decide who their directors are going to be, because some host sites, like our California host site, we bring in all guest directors from the community, a mix of professional and community directors, to work with the students. But there are other host sites who like to have student directors. So it's up to them how they want to work that.
That's awesome. And I know a question that we need to have addressed. When is the date for 2017? What are we doing this?
Oh, yes, that is a good one. And I'm gonna have to look at my calendar really quick. It's in September. It's September 28th and 29th. So 28th being the night of reception, if they choose to do a reception, 29th being the actual festival, 8 p.m. on the 29th in your respective time zone.
So there is no, is there a limit to the number of hosts that you have?
No, there's no limit. I would love it if we had 100 hosts. Yeah, there absolutely isn't. And there's no charge to the host. And you can use it as a vehicle for fundraising. You can use it as a vehicle for friend raising if you want to do it for free. The playwrights are giving us the right to do their work for the festival free of charge, and we have no submission fee. So it's my way of trying to give back to the community of playwriting and theater and young actors. So we would take as many hosts as we can get.
Well, and also, what a wonderful exploration experience, where we're not worried about perfection. We're worried about getting the job done. We're not worried about getting the perfect person for the role. We are just going to take the role that comes to us, and where we are working on being a collaborative group and a communicative group and a problem solving group. Well, yep.
Have fun.
Yeah. Oh yes. Fun. Oh, fun. I think it would be so much fun. All right. So Wendy Marie, thank you so much for talking to me today. I have one last question for you, since you are a wonderful playwright and your play Breathless is in our catalog. And I'm also going to make sure that we put Billy's play, A Box of Puppies, in our show notes as well, because everybody needs to go and read that. There's some just his play, Huge Hands, is just, I just think, is marvelous.
He is such a great playwright. I love him.
We love him too. He's he's a great friend to theater folk. But Breathless. Tell, what is it about writing for youth that sparks you?
I love the freedom in writing for youth. I love that that young actors and young audiences just embrace magical realism, and they embrace fantasy, and they embrace breakouts from moments of realism. And there's not even a question about it. Like, if you want a character to suddenly just fly, you can do that. And they're just going to accept it and get caught up in the magic of it. I think I enjoy writing for young audiences more than any other, you know, community of people.
Oh, I'm with you. I also find that there's no group that's more optimistic and enthusiastic about putting on a play. And it's like, why would I, you know, because people say, oh, you know, writing for children, why would you do that? It's like, why would I write for adults sometimes? <Right?
laughs> I know, seriously.
You know,
they're really the best audience. I had a colleague here who said, I'm not going to write for anyone but young adults anymore, because they have the most enjoyment from my work.
Yeah. And I think, I actually think that it's the only audience where you can actually change a life with theater.
Yeah.
Whether it's someone who's in a play and they just, even the pureness of learning how to speak in front of an audience, like, that can change somebody's life. Or someone sitting in an audience and going, I thought I was alone. That I'm not alone.
Yeah. And that was a big core part of Breathless for me, was hitting those various audiences and saying, you know what, there's other people are dealing with these issues.
Oh, I know. You know, it's those three girls, the three leads in Breathless, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about Breathless in the extra, but I just find they're just so, well, they're human and flawed, and just, they shine in their flaws, you know, like, they just, it's a real great showcase role, not for one, because that's sometimes what happens with plays. You know, it's that one lead girl. This one has three.
Yeah, and that was my goal, is to write material. My goal remains to be to write material for young women, to have a chance to embrace what it means to be a young woman and the challenges of that and the wonderful things to celebrate about being a young woman. I don't think there can be too much work that explores that.
No. And I'll end on this. I really, just speaking as a woman playwright, I love that nobody cares about me being a woman in the high school market, right? They care about, is this going to be good for my students, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's very freeing.
It's very freeing. Absolutely. Okay, so let's make sure we end on the wonderful festival that Wendy Marie is piloting, is the head of, the Red Eye Tens International Play Festival. And you can find information on the show notes. And you too can still participate. It goes September 29th, and they take hosts. They want hundreds of hosts. So you guys should all get involved. Okay, thank you so much, Wendy Marie.
Thank you.
Thank you, Wendy Marie. Okay, before we go, let's do some theater folk news. Any links to today's episode, including the Red Eye Play Festival, International Play Festival, and Wendy Marie's wonderful play in the TFOC catalog, Breathless, can be found in the show notes at theaterfolk.com/episode188. So let's talk about Breathless for a second. It is a relatively new play in our catalog, and it's just really great if you have a trio of senior girls who are looking for some really meaty parts. We have three girls named Summer, each of them in their own race for discovery. Summer Adams is looking for love in all the wrong places. Summer Robertson is hanging on through her battle with cancer. And Summer Davis refuses to lose, even at the expense of her body and her friends. If we just breathe, where will we go? Will we crash or will we fly? I love it. I love the description of this piece. It's a beautiful character piece, again, with three strong female leads. And you can read sample pages over on theaterfolk.com. Or, you know, we've got those handy-dandy show notes. Yeah, you know, we keep making them. I'm sure people use them. But it's theaterfolk.com/episode188. And if you get that sample pages, you love the play, you decide, I'm going to produce it, we want to know about it. We want to hear from you. We want to see a picture, see some rehearsal footage. Give us 30 seconds. We want to brag about you because we are doing production features that showcase your success with Theater Folk Plays. And hey, even if you're having a struggle, we want to share that too. Everything is a story. Everything is a learning moment, right? We want to hear about it. We want to see about it. We want to share it. So all you have to do is send it to us at tfolk@theaterfolk.com. We want to hear. All right. Finally, where can you find this podcast? We post new episodes every second Tuesday at theaterfolk.com and on our Facebook page and Twitter. You can find us on youtube.com/theaterfolk and on the Stitcher app. You can also subscribe to the Drama Teacher Podcast on iTunes. Just search for the word Theater Folk. And that's where we're going to end. Take care, my friends. Take care.